Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strike him out, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Rader going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, a solid week for the baseball team. Men's golf with a really impressive performance out in California this past week. Track and field continues to shatter records, and the bowling team getting set for yet another trip to the NCAA tournament. But we're going to start with the big news. Now, our last episode we recorded last Monday afternoon, and when we recorded, that's when the rumors started to swirl a little bit about Brian Hodson possibly leaving Arkansas State. He had won 45 games in two seasons, and he was a candidate for a lot of jobs, but it came out last Monday evening that he was accepting the head coaching position at South Florida. So as soon as that happened, Jeff Purinton began his search for the school's 18th all-time head coach. News started coming out this past Saturday afternoon, and Sunday it was officially announced that Alabama assistant Ryan Pannone would be the guy. And he has served as the Alabama offensive coordinator the last couple of years, an offense that has led the nation in offensive tempo. This is a guy that's also coached in the NBA with the Pelicans. He's coached in the G League, professional leagues overseas in China, Germany, Israel, Korea, Slovakia, as well as on the high school and AAU levels. So there's a lot to unpack here. And here to help us kind of sort through it, a great friend of ours, former A-State basketball player and somebody who's been on staff with Coach Pannone the last two seasons at Alabama. He's the director of basketball operations for the Crimson Tide. Welcome in, Josh Pierre. How you doing, Josh?
I missed that voice, I can tell you that. That just brought me back about 10 years. Everything is going great and going well here in Tuscaloosa.
Well, we'll just kind of get right to it here. You've been on staff with Ryan Pannone the last two seasons. So what are the Red Wolves getting with Coach Pannone?
Man, Coach Pannone's great. Loved working with him for the past 2 years. You're going to get somebody who has an unbelievable work ethic, one of the hardest workers I've ever been around. Up late at night, early in the morning, he's going to have that coffee. You better believe that. Just a tireless worker. I don't know many people that are going to outwork him, if any. And just an unbelievable basketball mind, just a basketball library, basketball junkie. I mean, film, on the court, scouting reports, offense, defense, whatever you want. He's got an idea. He's got a drill for it and a way to attack it if you're on the other end. So he's always spitting out new ideas and having a lot of fun. Great to be around. Awesome personality. He's going to mix really well there with the Jonesboro community. And his family is awesome. He's got three small children, wife Sarah. I think they're going to fit in great in Jonesboro. He's going to be enriching the community. So the Red Bulls got a really, really good coach and a really, really good man.
Let me ask you this, because obviously you've been with Coach Oates, and right, he got where he is largely on the strength of the way he plays offense. So that was already kind of like that was his calling card. So what did Coach Pannone do to improve that? Like, everybody's talking about the impact he had on the Alabama offense, which we all thought was pretty daggum good anyway. So what have you, bring to the table?
So Coach Oates obviously has changed the game for college basketball in the way that he coached offense before Coach Pannone got here, which everybody knows. Coach Pannone can bring and has brought here the last couple of years, obviously new and different ways to attack certain defenses, which is great. New drills to kind of help our guys be able to, every movement, being able to read and react to different things on the court, opposed to having to run a set or something like that, which it's great. We got great sets and great plays too, but just the drills and the habits on offense and the 5-1-0 and the shell and all the different things that we did in practice to kind of help our guys just be able to just play next movements has really helped. I mean, I think that's really helped grow our offense. You're always a step behind when you're on defense, but it always felt like we were a couple steps ahead of the defense just by the habits that our guys built in practice and repetitions over and over. And Coach Pannone brought a lot of that, and a lot of the drills that we had too, he, you know, just kind of maybe tweaked and just kind of kept having the emphasis that Coach Oates has, and Coach Bowman, Adam Bowman, who helps run our offense too, that they built here since they were at Buffalo.
Yeah, you mentioned how much time he spends watching film, and I thought all college coaches watched a bunch of film, but I've heard several people now just talk about how much time he spends in that area. So just how much time does he devote to studying what's going on the floor?
Yeah, he doesn't waste, tries not to waste any time, which I envy for him. He doesn't waste any time. If he's going to drive somewhere far, he's probably going to have someone help him drive to so that he can watch film. Or whenever me being the operations guy, one of the first things you'd always ask when we get on the bus is how far is the drive, so he could see if he could pull his laptop out and watch. Just anytime there's a moment where he can get 20 minutes of film or 30 minutes of film where there's no time wasted, I think that time started to stack up too. Where you can get a half in every now and then or get some clips in every now and then. So he watches a ton of film. He saves, edits. He has something for everything, which I think is while he's in the position that he's in now, being the head coach at A-State, there he's prepared for the moment so much film-wise that it's always going to be there and available and ready. He watched a ton of film. I remember when I was watching a lot of film, just the time that you have to be able to devote. And one thing he's going to do is he's going to watch film, but he's going to be at home and hang out with his kids and make time for that, which is important to him. I think that was really something special about him too, that he was able to work really hard, but also, you know, be at home and hang out with his family.
So this is always, these are kind of weird. These things happen, especially when you're talking about hiring an assistant while the season's still going on. You guys were into the second weekend of the NCAA tournament, and then news leaks that this could be the move that happens. And I know you said, like, when the plane lands, all of a sudden, you know, he's gone to the next thing. So did you guys even get an opportunity to talk about him taking the job at your alma mater?
Yeah. Whenever, you know, all the rumors were swirling, you know, it's rumors to everybody else on Twitter, but we're in the film room, we're eating pregame meal, and we're just doing our normal thing. And, you know, I just told him congratulations and that if he needed anything from the mayor of Jonesboro, just let me know. We just got to talk to him about it a little bit. I said, if you need anything, man, I was there for a long time. And, you know, it feels like even longer, but it really wasn't that long ago I was there. So, you know, I don't think I've been, besides Baton Rouge, I haven't been anywhere for 6 years. Place means a lot to me, and he knows that. So I just told him to obviously take care of it like he will. And everybody was really excited for him.
It is your alma mater. You got to be proud to know what is going on right now in Jonesboro. And obviously a guy that you really like and Coach Pannone now getting the job. But even before now, with Coach Hodson, a guy that you had spent time with before when he was at Alabama, and for him to win 45 games, this program to win 45 games these last 2 years and see the kind of success that A-State has had these last 2 years. And look, you and I got to see each other the last 2 years when the Red Wolves came to Tuscaloosa,
right?
And you saw what this program was like. A-State went into Tuscaloosa back in November, and it was a tie game with seven minutes to go. So you know who you're working for, but you had to be a little bit proud too.
No, it's no doubt. It's Coach Pannone being there. I'm super proud that he's going to be the coach. And when B got the job, I was just as excited. You know, B is great. Did a great job there. Won some really big games on the road, which is really cool to watch. I think I've watched, you know, and Aaron jokes with me about it all the time, I've watched every Arkansas State game either live or on rerun since I got done playing. And so that's how much I love Jonesboro. Aaron and I met there, obviously. She was captain on the cross-country team. And so I love it. Even whenever I was done playing and I worked for Grant, Coach Mack and Ross and all those guys that were there, like, we were really good. And it's just, I think the cultivation of just what A-State really is. A-State really is good at basketball. Football was really good when I was there. Obviously, we had a bunch of really good coaches, and it was really fun. But the last 10 years, give or take a couple of years here and there, A-State basketball has been pretty respected in the league and always played that night before ready to go to the championship game a lot of the times. And Brian Hodgson, Ryan Pannone, Graham McCaslin, I work for Bilotto too. But, you know, those guys they've done a pretty good job.
So whether it was when you guys legitimately were scouting Arkansas State or when you're just watching them because you said you've kept up with your team,
Yeah, no.
How similar were the two offenses? How similar is what A-State was doing to Alabama's?
Very similar. I mean, B was with us for, gosh, 8 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it was very similar. The pace, the you know, play calls, the everything. The pregame, I watched pregame warmups. You know, a lot of those things are the same. You could see, like, B had his play sheet. It's the exact same format that coach has here. So it's pretty similar. And obviously the success, the formula that Coach Oates and the foundation that he's built here, people want to replicate in their athletic departments for basketball. And those coaches take what they've learned here and take it and use it for good. And it's pretty similar. You can say the same for Petway's doing the same. Charlie's doing the same. You know, all those guys that are getting jobs. I think the recipe is pretty prime for success. And obviously Oates is the head of that snake, and he's a beast, and I love him. And he's an amazing, he's a far better man than he is coach. And people talk about what kind of coach he is, but he's a joy to be around every day and consider him a really cool friend.
You led into the one other thing I really wanted to ask you about, and it's easy to give a guy a chance to brag on his boss, but you know, 2 years ago, all three of his assistants got jobs. The same time, Hodson got this job, he lost all three assistants. Then he reloads, and now all of a sudden, here he is losing the assistant again. So his coaching tree is growing rapidly. Why is that?
The main thing is the success that he's built here and the culture that he's able to continue to cultivate every year and not waver amongst anything that happens. I think that's attractive to other athletic directors. The pace that we play, excited brand of basketball that people want to come watch, I think is attractive for other schools that are in the position of reloading their athletic department and wanting to generate some excitement. And, you know, when you can hire somebody that's had underneath the success of Nate Oates, that I think that the players and, you know, coaches putting a lot of guys, we're putting a lot of guys in the NBA and winning in the NCAA tournament. And I think that whenever you can be an assistant and you can go have your own program and be a part of that, then, you know, you're able to recruit to that. I think that's probably the main reasons why these people are wanting to try to have success like Alabama's having, just on a different scale, on a different level.
You know, we're hearing a lot about Coach Pannone and just what a great offensive mind he is, but dealing with players, you've seen it on a daily basis. Yeah. How is he interacting with players, and how do you think that's going to translate to the recruiting front?
I think it's going to be good. I think, obviously, you know, Coach Pannone hasn't been in college very long, so it's a little bit different, but the relationships that he's able to, you know, build with the players, and just I think the best part about Coach is his Pannone is his experiences that he's had. He's been to all these different levels, NBA, high school, college, and I think that he can use all those different experiences, the relationships that he's built, to be able to relate to where these guys want to go whenever they're done at A-State. So I think that's going to help him out a lot.
I love how you've kept up with A-State over the years. And, man, I'm not afraid to say it here. You're one of my all-time favorite student athletes at Arkansas State. And just you as a player, there was something different about you. And John Brady sensed that too. He had a relationship from the time you were a kid with you, and your father was on his staff for a very long time and kind of grew up with Coach Brady's daughters. But that experience here at Arkansas State playing under Coach Brady, how did that kind of make you want to continue along in basketball and want to go into what you're doing right now?
Well, I'll try to give you a short answer depending on how much time I have to talk about Coach Brady. And I've said this over the years, when I was a young kid, 3, 4, 5 years old, met Coach Brady, treated me like his own son, always has. Talked to him the other day, still talk to him all the time. He gave me opportunities from 5 years old to 25 years old that nobody else could give me. Just being able to be around college basketball at the highest level growing up, playing for him, giving me an opportunity to play on the court, meaningful minutes in games and helping us win at A-State, allowing me to do scouting reports while I was a player. And so just him giving me those experiences just really, really helped me know that you definitely have heard me say this thousands of times, but just being able to impact players, their families, my walk with in my Christianity and my faith has played a big part of me, which grew a lot in the 6 years that I was in Jonesboro at 747, which is the college ministry there that I was a part of, where Aaron and I met. Just being able to have these experiences from Coach Brady that helped me do that was, it changed my life and it changed my family's life, and it's going to change generations to come in my family. So super grateful for Coach Brady, but also grateful for Coach Mack, who hired me when he didn't know me and gave me a chance. So, I mean, A-State and Jonesboro have a huge, huge place in Aaron and I's heart just because we both came from two different parts of the country and met there. And now we have a little son named Shepherd, who I pray knows Jesus more than anything. Don't care about his basketball game, probably care a little bit more about his golf game. So it's Jonesboro is a really, really special place. It was a special place for us. I know it's going to be special for Ryan too, but I love Jonesboro. Follow every single game for the team since I've been gone. Try to watch every single game. So I love Jonesboro. And I got a lot of friends. I counted with Aaron last night. I got about 200 text messages from all my friends that are still there and people that I used to work with and super close with Amy Holt still. She's like a mom to me. So if I started naming people, I'd be on here all day.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, you're naming a lot of good ones. And look, when we started this interview, I didn't know we'd get into Coach McCaslin, but since we're talking about everybody else, I am curious, just what you saw in that staff back then. So many coaches have gone on to great success, and that includes Coach Mack and James Miller and Jareem Dowling and, of course, Ross Hodge, who just got the West Virginia job last week. You were part of that group, Josh. So did you see the kind of success coming that they're having right now?
Yeah, so something different about Coach Mack that I just was attracted to, and obviously his love for the Lord was the most important, but what Coach Mack taught me the most, which I'm super grateful for, is that you always have to choose people over everything. Whenever he came to A-State, he chose the people that he knew and cared about and loved and that wanted to win. So whenever you just run around, he used to tell me, Josh, you're really good at running around loving and serving people. And I've tried to live by that since then. And when I was there with Coach and Jareem was there, who I knew before, and James Miller, who is obviously Dreams at Kansas State, but now James Miller, who's at Oklahoma State, he was there early when Coach Mack was there. And then Ross came in. I was helping Ross with the guards the whole time I was on his end. We would do all the things. And so early on, I just felt like, and Dr. T was there too. Obviously, he was the ops guy, and he was ripping and running all the way around. And I felt like, and I had opportunities to go to places, and I didn't came back, and Coach Mack let me, which no one really knows about. But Coach Mack, I knew was an absolute star in this, going to be an absolute rock star in here just because of how he loved people and how competitive he was and how much he wanted to win and what he was convicted by. And Ross was the same way. So I'm like, man, if I can work with these guys, I think that's going to be a really good foundation for my young coaching career, because Coach Brady was retiring. So like, I was the coach I played for, and he was out. So yeah. I was obviously searching. And so, I mean, I talked to Coach Mack today, and I talked to Ross the other day. And I mean, I talk to these guys all the time, and so I'm super, super close with them still. And that experience, that 1 year alone, changed my entire life. And obviously Jonesboro, brought me some or more relationships that I'll have for the rest of my life.
As you mentioned, we talked a lot your path with Coach Brady because you're a coach's kid. So your dad, did he ever waste any time trying to talk you out of doing this? Or was he just knew it was no point? Or was he all for you getting in the family business?
I think he was all for it. There was a part of me, like I'm doing now, that loves administration and the people that you get to, and the people part of that as well. I think he wanted me to kind of do that some. Gotten to do a lot of that here. But he said, man, whatever you want to do, as long as you're living right, then I think you're going to be able to do a really good job. And he didn't ever really try to talk me out of it. My brother's doing the same. He's coaching at Liberty. He's been there for 8 years. They went to NCAA tournament this year. Never really tried to talk me out of it, but just had to make sure I was aware of what I was getting myself into. I know there's a name that I have to try to uphold. I don't think I'll ever, be who my dad was, but I'm sure going to try.
One thing that just kind of stands out through this whole conversation is the fact that you look back over the last 15 or so years of A-State basketball. I don't know if there's anybody that has more connections to just every chapter of what's happened yeah. around here than you, Josh. And you're so invested still, and I think that's pretty cool.
I love Jonesboro. You know, it's such a good place. And just being on that campus, I feel like I grew up there. Obviously met Aaron there. And what's really cool, the coolest part for me is, you know, I got there in 2012. It's 2025 now. And all those life experiences, every place I went along the way, it gets me emotional because it led me here. And I get to be here with Coach Oates. And to me yeah. right now, Coach Oates, it tears me up. It makes me cry because Coach Oates has changed my life and I love him so much. And he gave me opportunities that not a lot of people were willing to do and take a chance on me at this level. And so I'm forever indebted to him. He's the best. He's a great boss. He's great. And there's a reason why all these other athletic directors want to hire people that's worked for him. He's an unbelievable coach, but I could hang out with him any day and go to his house and have fun. He's a normal guy and I love him.
All right, Josh, we've established you're one of the best guys in the world, but I want to hear the story real quick. We got just under 2 minutes. Tell me about the day Brady kicked you out of practice.
Which one?
It happened more than once?
Oh, my gosh.
He told me one day, he said, I kicked Pierre out of practice, and I remember just looking at him and saying, why? What did he do?
The two-minute version. All right, we're in practice. Gosh, I can't remember exactly who it was. Early on, I didn't get to practice much, right? So the years go on, and I start practicing. I got a lot better when I was there. So it was a lot of fun to just remember and see it now, like how my game grew. And people knew me off the court, and people knew me at the Pike House, and people knew me at 747, but nobody really knew me except for my teammates in between those lines, and I was a different person, which is why I don't play anymore. And so I was talking crazy at practice one day, and I was kind of getting everybody a little riled up, and somebody either didn't call a foul or they called a foul on my teammates, and I said, man, Coach, that was terrible. He just went, oh, and I don't really ever do that. But, you know, the competitive juices started flowing. You see me in practice and all those things. And so he kicked me out and sent me to the locker room. And I'm out there, like, peeking my head back in, asking, you know, like, kid in timeout, can I come back in? And, you know, that day was over.
What a great story. Josh, you're the best. We appreciate you, buddy. Couldn't be more proud of you. And thanks for coming on with us today.
Yep.
No, I appreciate you having me. And Jonesboro's home, and I know that Ryan's going to do an unbelievable job. So I'm excited for him.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model. So you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars. Bring a vehicle, get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
Red Wolves fans, this is Coach Destiny Rogers, and I'm asking you to help our student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that highlights our commitment to teamwork while raising awareness and support for our local community programs. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team letters, special gear, and exclusive access that you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled ImpactClub.com. Support makes a real difference in the lives of our student athletes and in the future of our sports program. Wolves up.
And we welcome you back to the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Good week for baseball. Played four games this past week, and it started on Wednesday. Took the trip down to Conway to take on UCA. Got off to a great start in that game. Will French homering to lead it off.
Second time this year he's done that.
Yeah, two home runs on the season. They've both been leadoff home runs. He had a couple of hits in the ball game, drove in three. A-State won it 12-2 in seven innings. A couple of little notes from this game. I love our redshirt freshman center fielder, Ashton Quiller. They knew he was going to really help out defensively out of the gate. I don't know if they expected him to be hitting around 300 yeah. at this point, but he's solid at the plate. Not only is he hitting around 300, but he's leading the nation in sacrifice bunts. He already has 10 of them on the year. Ashton went 3-for-3 in that UCA game, but he's a guy that's going to help out this team in a whole lot of ways.
Love him in the nine hole because it's basically like back-to-back leadoff guys. You know, if he gets on, then he's got Will French coming up behind him. And I love him bunting because even if he's trying to sacrifice to give you that out.
And get you a hit.
You better hurry or it's not going to be a sacrifice. This dude can fly. I would love, and I've been meaning to ask, I wish they'd put a pedometer on him one game because I'd love to see how much ground he covers. I said on one of our broadcasts this weekend, he plays the outfield like he's the only one out there. And I don't mean that as a knock to the other two guys or that he's a bad teammate. It's just like he's got that every ball is mine mentality playing center field.
That's what you want out of your center fielder. So, yeah, Ashton Quiller, a big bright spot. Jella Vanderlei was one of several pitchers that we brought in that night, and he ended up throwing two scoreless innings of relief and got the win.
Yeah, I thought he was sort of the man of the match, honestly, from an Arkansas State standpoint.
A big performance for him, and the Red Wolves would go right back to him the very next game, which was the series opener on Friday against ULM. Yeah. And before we get to Vanderlei, top of the first inning, I don't think I've ever seen a head coach ejected this early in a ball game, but Mike Silva was tossed with one out in the top of the first inning, and he had a good argument.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, I want to correct myself one thing. This Friday night's actually where I thought Vanderlei was sort of the man of the match.
All right. Well, he was definitely good on Wednesday too.
Yeah,
but
yeah, so he's been good, but was really pivotal on Friday night. But yeah, one out, top of the first. Coach Silva, I think he and the home plate umpire probably started off on the wrong foot. We'll say that the game was didn't really get started on time. Maybe is one thing to say. Felt a little sluggish getting it going. And then there was an issue, yeah, with our starting pitcher and the pitch clock and going to his mouth. And anyway, it just sort of got sideways quick and, yeah, led to something you don't see every day.
So I thought the guys really responded well immediately after that happened. Now, ULM did score once in the top of the first, but the first four batters at the bottom of the first all had base hits, and the Red Wolves ended up scoring three runs in the first. They scored another in the second, and they would go on to win the game 4-3.
Right.
So all the scoring was in the first two innings. And then we talk about Vanderlei. He came in out of the pen, gave us 3 2/3 innings, no earned runs. So he got the win again, back-to-back games. So he won the game Wednesday at UCA and then got the win in the opener on Friday.
Really good here when Maloney, you know, didn't go as deep as he wanted to go to Jelly, you know, who we saw, you know, last year, you know, as a Friday night starter a lot. So you know that he's a guy that if he comes in and gets in a groove, he can eat up some innings. You know, he certainly did that to perfection on Friday night and got it deep enough to hand it to Chase Richter.
Boy, how good is he?
He's really
you
good.
You got a lefty that comes in on the back end of the bullpen that's throwing upwards of 92, 93 miles an hour. And, I mean, he locates well. He's got a really good slider. I mean, it's good stuff when Chase Richter comes into the ballgame. But he came in and was lights out, got the two-inning save on Friday.
And the funny thing about it is, and we've talked about this a lot, in the old vernacular, right, you'd say, Chase Richter, well, he's the A-State closer. And that's kind of true, even though he got his first save of the season Friday night because
they've used him in a lot of roles.
Because Mike Silva just believes, like, Chase Richter is the go-win-the-game guy. And if it's the outs that need for that to happen come in the sixth inning, Chase Richter's throwing in the sixth. If the outs that need to happen for that to come true are the last three of the ninth, he's throwing in. He is the high-leverage guy. He's a stopper, maybe more than a closer. And so it was good to see him get, you know, not to jump ahead, but not one, but two saves this weekend.
Yeah, so the Red Wolves pick up the win Friday. ULM did even the series on Saturday. They won that game 8-2.
Now, let me tell you one thing I saw, and I know we won't talk as much about Saturday. But so it was a really interesting start for Andrew Allen, the freshman, right?
Okay.
So he goes 4 up, 4 down. I think he struck out 3 of them to start the game into the first out of the second inning. Then he's trying to pitch a guy inside, and he hits him with one out in the second, and that's his first base runner. And for whatever reason, it really affected him to the fact that he goes, mow down, mow down, mow down, mow down, hit a guy, walk, 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 and it's 1-0.
kind of snowballed.
It just kind of affected him for a minute. Now here, I say all that to say this: he didn't get out of that inning because Coach Livingston, the pitching coach, came out for a visit in the middle of that, and then when he handed out the third straight walk, Coach Livingston comes walking out of the dugout, and obviously that's the second mound visit. He knows he's done. Here's why I like, especially this, we're talking about a true freshman. He was standing on the mound trying to wave Coach Livingston back, trying to tell him, don't come out here, because he knew, I mean, he wanted to stay, he wanted to get out.
That was it.
And you don't see that every day. And it wasn't in like a showing anybody up way, but a lot of people at the park may not even have noticed it. But I just thought it was cool that the young guy was, doing all he could do to try to keep the coach from crossing that line, because he knew when he did, his night was done.
Andrew Allen is a really talented freshman that's going to win a lot of games. Another guy that's a really talented freshman that's already winning a lot of games is Jack Hibbard. And he got the start on Sunday, and he ended up turning in a quality start. He went six innings. He gave up three earned runs, didn't walk anybody. He leads the Sun Belt in strikeout-to-walk ratio.
Well, he's 14-1 now.
Yeah, 28 strikeouts to two walks on the year.
That's pretty good.
Just phenomenal for anybody, much less a true freshman.
And how about the three earned runs came on two home runs. Yeah. Literally, ULM literally got a bloop and a blast tie it. They got a solo homer to lead off the seventh. All he did in between those two home runs was sit down 11 in a row.
He did. Really pitching well. And as far as the pitching goes in that Sunday game, Gavin Galley came in after Hibbard left. He retired all four batters that he faced on 10 pitches.
Yeah.
And then Chase Richter came in and was able to get his second save of the weekend. He went the final inning in two-thirds, and the Red Wolves go on to win it 5-3.
It is interesting to watch the chess match, too, because Galley's out there, right? He's coasting, and he gets to, one out in the eighth or whatever it was, and they bring a left-hander in to pinch hit. Well, so here comes Silva. Like, okay, you want to bring in a lefty? I happen to have one I'll bring in.
That's exactly what he told me in the post game. He said, I was glad when they went to the left-handed pinch hitter. I had Richter already ready, so we brought him in. And, yeah, that didn't hurt his feelings a bit that they did opt to go that route. There was some timely hitting in this game. I thought Kaysen Campbell was a really good story in the Sunday game.
Yeah.
He had three hits, including an RBI single that put us up for good, put us up 3-2. And then there was a play at the plate, and there was a wild throw by the pitcher back home that scored two runs. And Kaysen was able to score all the way from second on that play, which was some heads-up base running. So
I'll say this. How about the first three trips through the lineup, the 5, 6, 7 spots, which is Jake Henry Williams, Kaysen Campbell, and Drake Anderson. Those guys were 6-for-9 between them, the first three trips through the lineup Sunday out of 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, that was really, really good to see. So, in fact, those three combined for the game for 7 hits. So, 7 of our 9 hits came from those three guys. Red Wolves win the game and the series, and that was an important win. They're sitting now at 4-5 in conference play, right there in the middle of things. They're 13-14 overall, and that's after a 3-9 start. So, they're 10-5 the last 15 games, and this is a team that just continues to get better week to week, it seems. Now, some scheduling notes for this week. UCA, Tuesday night at 6. That's going to be played as scheduled, but it's already been announced as we're recording this that the Little Rock game, which is a makeup game.
Already rescheduled once, yeah.
Not going to be played this Wednesday due to the weather forecast.
Yeah, so by the time you're listening to this, that's probably been made official. So no baseball on Wednesday. And then you'll trip out to Conway. Different Conway than they went to last week. This one's the
a little bit further east. Yeah. Conway, South Carolina is where the Red Wolves will be this weekend, taking on 21st-ranked Coastal Carolina, Friday at 5, Saturday at 1. And Sunday at noon.
You get fun challenge. I know we've got a head coach and a staff, but I think we got a bunch of guys, too, who are going to embrace getting some of that action this weekend.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same. You first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net.
Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Red Wolf fans, this is Demario Davis, proud Red Wolf and linebacker for the New Orleans Saints. And I'm asking you to help out our current A-State student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our players by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. Thank you, and Wolves up.
Back with you one more time here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by the Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Taking a look at what else is happening in the world of A-State athletics. Football, back from spring break. They'll resume their spring practices this week. Tennis ended up dropping their matches this past weekend to a couple of really good teams in Appalachian State and Marshall. They're still 11-7 on the year, 4-3 in conference play, and they'll be on the road this weekend at Troy on Saturday and then at Georgia State on Sunday. How about track and field? They were all over the place this yeah. past weekend. They were sending student-athletes to meets in Austin, San Marcos, Birmingham, and Raleigh, North Carolina. Our man Jacob Pyatt, who was in here on this podcast a few weeks ago, shattering his own school record in the 5,000 meters. You want to know what we mean by shattering?
Yeah, it's
he beat his old record by nearly 30 seconds.
I mean, you just don't do that.
And I'm sure he was at stoplights this week, looking at other people around him and saying, I wonder if they know that I just shattered the school record by nearly 30 seconds.
I mean, you're supposed to beat records by tenths of a second or maybe a second or two tops. You're talking about distance. But you don't just go beating records by 30 seconds. It's unheard of.
Menachem Chen with a good weekend. He won the discus and the shot put. Naima Williamson winning the long jump. Carly Pujol, we're saying her name a lot lately. Yep. She set the program record in the women's pole vault to win that event in San Marcos. And look, if you're up on the pole vault list setting the new school record at Arkansas State,
yeah,
that's a big deal. And that's Stephanie Foreman's old record. She was just put into the Hall of Honor a few months
yes,
ago.
That's true.
Andrew Mason winning the 2,000-meter steeplechase in the event at UAB. How about Bradley Gelmert and the season he's having? He won the men's pole vault at the Clyde Littlefield Texas Relays in Austin. These are where all the big timers are. And his jump of 5.55 meters is the top mark in the country this year.
Mm.
Colby Eddowes, former podcast guest, also victorious over the weekend. He won the 110-meter hurdles in San Marcos. Track and field right back at it. This weekend, they'll be in Oxford at the Joe Walker Invite. What a week for the men's golf team. They went out to Torrey Pines. We were talking about them last week. You, I think, had the suggestion that they should have to study a lot
yes.
while they're out there. Well, whatever they did worked because they finished second out of 20 teams.
And I think it was maybe by a stroke.
Yeah, it was within two strokes, yeah. I think. Yeah, second out of 20 teams at the UC San Diego Invitational. And our man Thomas Schmidt, another former podcast guest, winning the individual title. Second win of the season, fourth of his career. He was also named the Sun Belt Conference Player of the Week. Pretty amazing what they're doing right now.
Yeah.
Coach Hagan continues to keep that program rolling, and they're currently competing at the Cowboy Classic in Maricopa, Arizona. Women's golf also getting ready for an upcoming event. They're going to close out the regular season at the Brickyard Collegiate. That will be in Macon, Georgia.
It's not in Indianapolis.
Kind of misleading there.
And they actually have a golf course at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So you would think that's where the Brickyard Collegiate was.
They've got a golf course there?
I believe so, yeah.
They'll compete in that event coming up next Monday and Tuesday. And got to talk about the bowling team. Big week for them. They're
boring.
Beginning play. And they're 17th
yep.
consecutive NCAA tournament. They'll be at the regionals in Pittsburgh starting. That's not Pittsburgh, Kansas. That's Pittsburgh,
no, that's
Pennsylvania.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, yeah.
Starting Thursday at 8 a.m. against 10th-ranked Maryville.
And I know it's a tough match. I know they got a lot of respect for Maryville, too. And so that'll be a big-time match right out of the gates. trying to get out of that regional and get to another Final Four.
One of these years, and I like the point you made last week, you know, it's always a team that you're not expecting. Maybe this isn't the best team,
it's
best
not,
bowling
yeah, the most
team
hyped
that we've
up
had.
One, highest ranked. It's not those things.
But maybe this is the year they do sneak through.
It totally could be, and I know that's kind of getting us to the end of the line, so I'll say I hope they win the national championship, even though that will get us a whopping 0 Bubba's Cup points, of which we currently lead.
How about that? We're in first place in the Bubba's Cup standings, which means we're also in first place in the Bobo's Cup standings.
That would be true.
Is where we put all of our weight around here.
It means more.
It does. Not just because of the name behind.
The metrics mean more.
The award, but the metrics mean more because it's the average ranking per sport.
Yeah, so they updated the Bubba's Cup for the winter by adding the two basketballs, men's and women's basketball, and an indoor track and field for the men and women, and obviously scored a lot of points in all those sports. 14 Bubba's Cup points for the women's basketball team because they got 13 points for finishing second. And so in defense of everybody else in the league, maybe when they picked us to finish 13th, that's really a prediction of how many Bubba's Cup points we would get. It wasn't where they thought we'd finish in the standings. But he got 13 in the regular season plus the bonus point for winning the tournament. So, yeah, 14 Bubba's Cup points for women's basketball, 12.5 for men's basketball because they took those four teams and they evenly split the points for first, second, third, and fourth place. Then, you know, indoor track, scoring a bunch. So, yeah, up front, out front, in the lead heading into the spring. Now, again, two things I'd caution you about, and I think we absolutely can still win the thing, and I think we will. But you got to watch for two. Obviously, getting nothing, you know, scoring no points in softball because they don't have it. And then the fact that, again, bowling's not a Sunbelt sport. So you get nothing in the Bubba's Cup for that.
Anything else we need to discuss here?
I can't remember if we said this last week or not, but even if we did, it bears repeating also. Congratulations to Liam Hicks, catcher for your Miami Marlins.
Excited for him. You know, we had him on however many months ago on this podcast, but. Excited for his journey and kind of where he's at. Came out, I think Chris Hutchinson may have tweeted out the exit velo of his first at bat, and he lined out. But it was like 105.4 off the bat, and I'm thinking, well, that's Liam Hicks, because I can't remember a former Red Wolf or a Red Wolf at any time hitting the ball harder than what Liam Hicks did every single time he was up there. Even his outs were impressive. So to see him do that in his first major league at bat, I thought was pretty cool.
Yep, and yeah, great young man and big fan, obviously. And so congratulations to him, adding his name to the list of big leaguers. And then Tyler Zuber had a phenomenal spring for the Mets. Because of the options he's got, I think that played as big a role as anything, to him starting in Syracuse and AAA. But I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, sooner than later, whether it's either somebody's not producing or somebody gets hurt, Tyler Zuber's going to be in that bullpen for the Mets not that far down the road.
Excited for both of those guys. Man, it was fun talking with Josh Pierre.
Yeah.
He is one of my favorite guys that's ever come through here as a player, and I love that he was around here for a couple of years, even after his playing career was over. And had to bring up that story about him getting kicked out of practice, because that was one of the most shocking stories of a player getting kicked out of practice that I had ever heard. And I still remember when Coach Brady told me about that. But anyway, great stuff.
It's also entirely possible that just Coach Brady just randomly decided that day, you know, I'm going to just look for any kind of reason to throw Josh Pierre out of practice, just because, like, what's the last thing they'd expect I'd do?
That would be it. All right. Thanks to Josh for joining us. Enjoyed this episode. Of course, we're going to have a lot to talk about these couple of weeks. We'll get Ryan Pannone in here and let you get to know him a little bit better here in the very near future as well. Hope you join us again next week for our next edition of the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank.